Good morning. Thank you, Jen, for that rendition. In her defense, I asked of all of our musicians coming up, I said, who can we ask that wouldn't be just like completely ticked at us and would still keep coming back and performing? And Marianne said Jen, and so I appreciated the opportunity to be led in that chorus, because if we're gonna call a series What the World Needs Now, we gotta at least sing that once, and I'm hoping that that's gonna be stuck in your head today, because you know there's worse songs to be stuck in your head, right? And Abby, thank you so much for that that meditation. Where'd she wind up? She took off. She's back there. What a great, you know, there are mornings that are like this that I kind of describe as like pregnant with possibility. Like you don't know exactly what's going to happen. And already we've had some surprises this weekend, and man, that was so awesome to be able to hear a child's book and to realize that some of the best truths are the ones that are accessible to little kids, which is why great spiritual teachers, like Gia said, if you want to really understand, don't try to be like the super educated types. You know, little kids are going to get it better than you will. We're talking this week about, and I should mention too, last week Dr. Sarah Kornfield did such an amazing job talking about surrender and sharing some of her insights from her studies in her area of research at Hope College. We are so incredibly gifted to have such wise people, such educated people, share such relevant findings and topics with us. And man, what could be more relevant? I think this past week, I was especially paying attention to the militaristic language that so often permeates a lot of Western Christianity, Protestant Christianity, especially evangelical Christianity. So the idea of surrender being the antidote to that, of laying down your arms, metaphorically, it was such a good talk. This week, I'm gonna try as best I can to cover a topic that is so deep, so dense, that we're gonna definitely come back to it more, but I want to at least introduce the idea, because when we're talking about what the world needs more of, we could say love, and sure, the world needs more love, but we happen to have the English language which uses the same word love when I'm talking about me loving my wife of 24 years and also me loving that pint of ice cream that we both ate last night, right? So you understand the difficulty of trying to use words like that. So I picked a word that has some relevance to me. I hope it has some relevance to you. All words are just what they mean. So sometimes learning words in different contexts from different sources give us different ways to see things. The word we're talking about is metta, metta. Metta is of Sanskrit origin, Pali, and it is one of the four Buddhist virtues, also called the four boundless qualities and the four Brahma Viharas. So this is a core idea of Buddhism, which for anybody who's not familiar is a religion in the sense that it contains a lot of people sharing practices and texts, but does not necessarily ascribe to a single divine source or being. And so there are practicing Buddhists who don't have any source of theistic belief at all, as well as those who ascribe meaning to some word called God. And we'll kind of get to that a little bit later in the talk. But within Buddhist mythology, the heart has four faces, which is why you'll see the god Brahma represented from the Hindu mythology with four faces. And this is common within mythology, the four directions, the four winds. And since each aspect belongs to the same heart, they're inseparable. This image of the four-faced heart is borrowed from this god Brahma, as I said, who had four faces, one for each of the four kinds of unselfish love championed in Buddhism, which is loving kindness, metta, which is what we're talking about this morning, equanimity, compassion, and sympathetic joy. That one I like a lot, and we're definitely going to come back to. Sympathetic joy is a word, especially in the Sanskrit, that has a quality of meaning for the experience of joy upon seeing someone else's happiness. Isn't that a really interesting, specific form of happiness and joy? We're not going to be talking about that this morning, though. We're talking about this idea of metta. And because the god Brahma was said to dwell in the Vihara, this idea of the Brahma Vihara means the divine abode or the divine dwelling. Said another way, these are aspirational virtues, much the same way in which Jesus, when he came and gave the Beatitudes, gave a way of being in this world that is something that we can ascribe to. And like many religious teachers, they say, here are these virtues to which we can ascribe. Some of them are attainable in ways that we think we can do, and others really challenge us, like when Jesus said to turn the other cheek and to love your enemy. The same idea comes from this form of religious teaching here. This metta, or maitri in Sanskrit, can be translated as benevolence, can be translated as loving or friendship, although those words don't encompass it. It gets far deeper than that. It means to care and to wish well for another being without judging them. It means to accept independently of agreeing or disagreeing with them and without wanting anything from them in return. And I would almost add, and they're without wanting to change the person you're trying to love. Said another way, we would sometimes use the word unconditional love, but that word has gone cloaked in a lot of religious imagery, and it doesn't really work because we do have conditions and boundaries, and we should have safe boundaries in our life. And if a person doesn't abide by those boundaries, we don't love them unconditionally by allowing them to continue to violate those boundaries, if that makes sense. But the value that this would most be closely associated with out of our values-based community is this value of well-being. We keep coming back to this over and over in our talks in this series, where we promote wholeness and wellness of mind, body, and spirit, recognizing our self-responsibility, our interrelatedness, and our interdependence. Now, if we're talking about this idea of metta, I think it's only fair if we go to the source, which is the Karaniya Metta Sutra in Buddhist mythology. This is one of the sutras in which this ideal of metta is laid out. Keep in mind, this is a translation, and at worst, it's an excerpted translation. The sutra is longer. I've kind of shortened it to make it relevant, but you get the idea when you're reading this. Again, keep in mind, we read this through the same lens that we would read the Beatitudes or some of these other religious texts, not as a, we should do this, and if we don't, we need to ask forgiveness. This isn't a set of lists of things that we do because we're told to do it, but it's a set of aspirational virtues. So the Karaniya Metta Sutra, or the Buddha's words on loving kindness, or metta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness, who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, wishing in gladness and in safety. And this part may sound familiar if you've ever done a metta meditation. Is that familiar to anyone? Has anyone ever participated in a metta meditation? By show of hands, a handful of you have. Okay. You can Google that later. There are some great ones out there. It's a worthwhile practice. We're actually going to do a miniaturized version of it in our talk back afterwards. But this is where we get this language. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease or be well. And within the Sanskrit, the Buddhist tradition, this isn't limited to just humanity. Now, a lot of these meditations we use for human beings, but I think it's quite helpful to extend that to all beings. If you want some clarification on what that is, it goes on to say, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, the medium, the short or the small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and yet to be born, may all beings be at ease. That's a pretty wide encompassing list. Let no one deceive one another. But then it goes on, and this is a level of a depth to a love that is definitely aspirational, because he says, as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So cultivate in your head for that moment the image of a mother caring for and protecting the life of her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness, metta, over the entire world, spreading upwards to the sky and downward to the depths, and outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will. This is an interesting idea. This is a word that bears sitting with and allowing to mess with us in a good way. There are, within Buddhist traditions, the what's called the near enemies and the far enemies of these virtues. This is a particularly Eastern approach. So the far enemy we would probably pick right off the bat. The far enemy of loving kindness would be hatred or ill will. But I find this interesting. The near enemy of metta is sentimentality, or I like to say thoughts and prayers. It's that, oh, I'm so concerned about what you're going through. It's in that book that we just read. It's the ones who are like, oh, hey, looks like you had a really hard day and things are all falling apart, and coming up with all these other solutions. In the scriptures, those would be Job's friends, for anybody who knows that biblical story. Oh, here's what you need to do to fix things. We all have those friends, right? That are maybe still on our friend group that we still don't want to unfriend them, but we know that when it comes time for going through tough things, there are the people who tell you what to do, who have all these ideas, who swoop in and out, and then there are the ones who, like the rabbits, sit with you. I would dare say that that is metta, that is a loving kindness demonstrated. And the emphasis in this idea of loving kindness is actually more on the kindness. You can love something and not like it. Anybody ever parented teenagers? Or parented at all? Or had dogs or cats? You know the idea, right? You can love something and not like it. You're not trying to make yourself like everything. It's not about forcing a sweetness where there is bitterness. But you can be kind to that which is not likable. We talked in pre-talk a little bit. This is a posture of the heart. I would almost describe it, if this works for you in your mental imagery, it's like physical therapy. The reason we do physical therapy is if we've had an injury and maybe we don't have the same range of motion, we're trying to extend range of motion, we're trying to extend flexibility. It's like that for our inner being, for our mind. It brings about a flexibility for something where we tend to atrophy. Our natural tendency is when people do us wrong, we want to get pissed at them. We want to snap back. And we feel anything but loving kindness for them. And we're not going to start doing metta meditations and be monks on our way to nirvana, meditating in the face of people yelling and shouting at us. That's some impossible ideal as well. But what we can do is begin to orient our heart, orient our worldview and our being in such a way that we look at the things that cause us harm, and even for just a few moments, wish well. Wish well. Now, before we get too far into how that looks outside, the most important thing you need to know about metta is that within all practices, it always begins first with you. Where do you draw from? What well do you draw from when you're extending loving kindness to the world if you don't have it for yourself? And let's be honest, extending metta towards ourselves is probably one of the hardest things to do. We're oftentimes hardest on ourselves. We treat ourselves worse than we would allow our best friend to be treated. And I've had good friends before that I've had to call out when they've said self-depreciating things. I know oftentimes in joke, but there are times where I'll stop them and say, don't talk about my friend that way because it matters what you say. So metta, loving kindness, begins first with yourself. I call this the oxygen mask principle. If you've ever flown, you know they tell you when the oxygen masks drop down, who do you put it on first, your kid or yourself? Oh, come on, you can do better than that. You've listened to more air safety controllers tell you about that. So when the oxygen masks drop down, you're in an emergency, and you have a little kid next to you, who do you put the mask on first?
Yourself.
There you go. Now I know that you're going to be safe when you travel because you care first for yourself so that you can care for those you care about. So if you get nothing else from today, don't worry about how you're going to extend metta to all these hard people. That'll come in time. Start first by cultivating this sense of loving kindness to yourself. Metta always begins with you. I'm not going to get through all these quotes. You can kind of read them later. There's some really, really good books that I've referenced in here. Sharon Salzberg wrote a book called Loving Kindness, The Revolutionary Art of Happiness. And she said, metta is the ability to embrace all parts of ourselves as well as all parts of the world. Anybody who's familiar with parts theory, the no bad parts, the IF, internal family system, IFS, embracing all parts of ourselves as well as all parts of the world. Practicing metta illuminates our inner integrity because it relieves us of the need to deny different aspects of ourselves. It's bringing our most authentic self first and loving who we are and where we are at. She goes on to say, for all of us, love can be the natural state of our own being, naturally at peace, naturally connected, because this becomes the reflection of who we simply are. John Philip Newell and others have talked through the streams of Celtic spirituality, and there's so much importance to where you begin the story. I, and probably many of you, grew up in a tradition that ascribed to a concept known as original sin. Meaning we're born inherently bad, and to become good, it has to be something external that happens to us. But within these early Celtic streams of Christianity, there were quite a few who told of a different way of being that says that perhaps there is a way of being that calls us back to what is inherently true and what is deepest and rightest about ourselves. That's why I love when Sharon says, metta, this idea of loving kindness, is the love that calls us back to the state of our own being. I'll leave you with, I'm not going to be able to get to this here, so we're going to have to save this one for another time. Let's do this as we close, because we've got some other fun things to talk about here. We're gonna do a mini abbreviated metta meditation in there, so you can see how it works. This is an extremely practical thing that you can do. And I would say this is something you can do regardless of your spiritual beliefs. Whether you believe in a divine or are agnostic or atheist, it doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, there's a study that was done on loving kindness meditation, LKM. This is a form or a type of meditation. And through brain studies and EEG case studies, they found the brain-heart connections that are activated in this. So these are practices that you can do that have tangible neurological benefits to you. Even if it feels woo-woo while you're doing it, there's nothing woo-woo happening other than you aligning yourself with a way of thinking or being. It's that uncomfortable feeling when you're doing a form of physical therapy and that range of motion is not quite there yet. It's that feeling that you'll encounter when you do this. And so prepare yourself for that. But taking the time to practice this and to cultivate this first for yourselves, then for those you love, and to keep extending that and radiating that out further and further. This is how the world changes. And that sounds dramatic, I know, and that's big and huge. And we talked in pre-talk about how these things can feel so pie in the sky, right? You know, when there's some really genuinely difficult things happening in the world, it's really tough to be alive and to exist and to keep your joy and your peace and your sanity in this world. So I get that. I know that you're not going to just sit around and meditate and you're going to have this peaceful loving kindness feeling that just wells up from within. But maybe Dan Harris wrote a book on meditation called 10% Happier. And maybe there is this 5 or 10% more loving kindness that you can begin to cultivate. And maybe that begins to bleed over into your relationships. And maybe your family begins to say, hey, you're not as cranky as you usually are. And your neighbors that you disagree with are asking you why you're not engaging them in the same way. Maybe it begins to change the way you interact with the world around you. So thank you for allowing me to share with you this morning, for sharing this planet and this time with me. Namaste.